We can talk about one more composer from the CD relevant to this conversation because he does precede the year 1910 or 1915 or whatever Thompson and Copeland said was the moment when American music begins, and that's Arthur Farwell. Farwell was the leader of the Indianist movement. He said he would be the first composer to take up Dvorak's challenge. Hmm. And his best music certainly deserves to be known and is not. Hmm. So our Dvorak in America CD, which we've been listening to, has three works by Farwell, including a world premiere recording of an American choral masterpiece, Pawnee Horses. But let's begin with the Navajo War Dance number 2. Why don't we listen to it and then guess what year it may have been composed? This again is Benjamin Pasternak.
When I first heard it, had I not known I was listening to it, I thought it might be a piece of early Bartok that I don't know about. Mm-hmm. Sound like early 20th century stuff.
Yep.
There's a rhythmic energy in it. He's relentless in the way he pounds back onto the pedal tone. He keeps one harmony.
Yep.
And I think, actually, Bartok would become more adventurous. This guy's more conservative, melodically, at least, than Bartok would mm-hmm. be. But the name of this composer is Arthur Farwell, born 1872, lived in 1952. So he would have been about 20 years old or so when Dvorak got to America.
So welcome to the American Bartok, Arthur Farwell, who was a disciple of Dvorak mm-hmm. and tried to do with Native American music what Dvorak was doing with African American music. He had a very interesting and varied career. I would say this is one of his best pieces. Angel, what are your thoughts about the Navajo War Dance number 2?
Well, now that we were talking, I think that it's very pertinent, the comparison to Bartok and to people like Manuel de Falla in mm-hmm. Spain, that were very obsessed in recuperating the fault lines. So maybe the problem of Dvorak was an advantage for him of being a foreigner and open-minded, is that he wasn't taken seriously because he wasn't an American. Hmm. So Bartok was able to create a school coming back to the folk songs because he was a Hungarian. But maybe the reason that Dvorak was forgotten is, of course, that he didn't stay here. But I think, you know, reflecting on listening to this, so Farwell could have been the real American Bartok, as you said. Hmm. What happened to him, Joe?
Well, he went through many different periods. At one time, he was trying to create public pageants in an attempt to create an authentic American idiom. We should take up this question after we listen to the other two pieces on this CD. Let's hear Pawnee Horses in both its solo piano version and its choral version. The solo piano version is 1905, and the choral version is 1937.
I'm thinking about what a lot of work it was to put that together.
My
for that
goodness,
chorus.
Absolutely.
You feel the same thing?
Phenomenal, phenomenal group, very well conducted, absolutely.
University of Texas Chamber Singers under James Morrow. That's hours and hours of rehearsal. And what an interesting piece.
Very interesting.
It's actually much more vivid in the choral version than the piano version.
No doubt.
This is music of the American composer Arthur Farwell. From Mesa and Plain, we heard Pawnee Horses in two versions, one for solo piano and then this second for chorus a cappella.
16-part a cappella.
Yeah. Where'd you find this guy, Farwell? How do you know, Joe?
Well, I'm very proud to say that I discovered this piece in score. There are recordings of two of his Indianist choruses on New World Records with the Greg Smith Singers. Piece is not nearly this good. One is the Navajo War Dance number one, and the other is the Old Man's Love Song. But I was interested in those, and I got the music. And when I looked at this piece, I thought, I won't use an expletive on the air.
Oh, you could.
I thought,
holy smoke.
This piece is far more interesting than the two that have been recorded. And it had never been recorded, and God knows if it had ever been performed since the 1930s. Mm. So I began to peddle it. And when I showed it to choral directors, there were only two possible reactions. I don't want to do it, or I can't wait to do it. So it was done at Montclair State University. It was done at the University of Texas. It was done at the University of Texas, El Paso, and the University of Texas, Austin. Mm-hmm. Jim Morrow, who you just mentioned, devoured the piece. And we are planning, if all goes well, to do a major Farwell retrospective. In D.C., we want to acquire all this music. There's a lot of a cappella Indianist music by Farwell, which we will be able to do, we think, with the Washington National Cathedral Choir, a first-rate professional chorus, since we're becoming the ensemble in residence this coming fall at the Washington National Cathedral.
Yeah, so Joe, I don't know this guy. Where's he from? Where did he, was he a teacher? Tell us about Farwell.
Well, believe it or not, he's from St. Paul, a city you know well, 1872. And isn't it interesting that as a former conductor of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, you've not heard the name Farwell. He lived among Native Americans in Wisconsin as a young man.
1872, it wasn't so far back that it was Indian territory in Minnesota.
He has out-of-body experiences.
Hmm.
He reveres the culture of the Native American. Then he has an epiphany in Boston. He hears the New World Symphony by Dvorak and takes seriously Dvorak's advocacy of, quote, Indian music. We talked earlier about how Dvorak felt he couldn't use the music. It had a funny scale and didn't have harmony. So Farwell decided he would take a crack at it. And he was somebody who was very familiar with Native American music of certain types. And what we're listening to is the result. He also founded the Wawan Press and was an advocate for the Indianist movement, which lasts in music into the 1930s. There's thousands of operas, songs, symphonies, string quartets that either use Native American tunes or invoke the lore of the Native American. And it's an abortive movement. It did not achieve what its advocates hoped for, which was a style of composition that Americans would embrace. So these two prongs of the Dvorak mission, the Negro melodies and the Indian songs, the first worked and the second didn't. But the failure is interesting, and the Indianist movement produces, among other things, the scherzos of the New World Symphony or the larghetto from the violin sonatina of Dvorak, some fascinating music by Farwell, and some fabulous music by Puzoni, who was obsessed with Native Americans, wrote his Indian Fantasy for piano and orchestra, a memorably poetic work using actual Native American tunes collected by Natalie Curtis. Farwell, however, changed his tune many times, Bill. Mm-hmm. At one time, he was trying to create outdoor pageants that would become an American signature, but that was supplanted by film. He was a teacher to Roy Harris. His later work is not Indianist. He has a set of polytonal piano pieces, which are also unknown. So Farwell is a composer who remains to be discovered.
And now I think it's time to wrap up. We've been listening during this program to music from a wonderful CD entitled Dvorak and America, a project of Joe Horowitz and Angel Gil Ordonez are both with us today. This thing won a lot of awards, CD. I don't keep track of them, but NPR was one of them, wasn't it?
Minnesota Public Radio named it one of the best CDs of the year.
Well, good for you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, just from what I've heard, it's wonderful, and I want to hear it again and again. Anyway, there's one more tune here, which is perhaps the most familiar tune ever composed by Antonín Dvořák. It's the slow movement of the New World Symphony. And people, when they first heard it at its first performance in New York, 1893, they said, wow, sounds like a Negro spiritual. A lot of people had that reaction. Not everyone. Somebody liked it. Some people thought that was not a good thing to be happening in a concert hall. But it was almost inevitable that it was turned into a hymn tune in a way. And that's the arrangement we're going to hear now. Tell us about what we're going to hear.
William Arms Fisher was one of Dvorak's students at the National Conservatory. And years later, after Dvorak died, he set words to the Largo as going home. Most people who know going home assume that it's a spiritual that Dvorak quoted. Mm-hmm. But the tune is by Dvorak. It was turned into a spiritual after he died. Fisher, as a P.S., was also the publisher of 24 Negro Melodies by Samuel Coleridge Taylor, a set that was inspired by Burley. So you had Burley as a former student of Dvorak going to this famous black British composer, Coleridge Taylor, just after the turn of the 20th century, and suggesting that he do what Dvorak said to do, which was take these Negro melodies, turn them into Western concert pieces. And Coleridge Taylor did, and created 24 solo piano pieces using plantation songs published by Oliver Ditson, which is to say William Arms Fisher in Boston. Mm-hmm. So those are two things that Fisher did, both inspired by Dvorak.
You know, this is a little bit off the side, but I live at 100th Street in Riverside Drive, which is an old fireman's memorial in New York. Wonderful sculpture dating back to the early part of the 20th century. And every year, to mark the fall of the World Trade Center, which took place on September 11th, the fire department actually holds its memorial there, not downtown. I've heard this ceremony many, many times. It's right outside my window. And in addition to hearing the bell rung, I forget, 354 times for every one of those young men and women who lost their lives, the other most remarkable part is hearing a bunch of bagpipes playing Going Home from Dvorak. Put that off to the side now, because we're going to hear a really beautiful, reverent performance now from Kevin Dace, Post-Classical Ensemble under Angel Gil Ordóñez. Let me thank once again my collaborators today, Joe Horowitz and Angel Gil Ordóñez. Always fun to be in the studio with you lads. You have such interesting takes and such interesting music you brought us. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Bravo on this wonderful album.
Thanks so much.
I'm Bill McLaughlin. You've been listening to Post-Classical, an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org. Now let's listen to Dvorak. We're going home.
You've been listening to Post Classical, a bi-monthly exclusive program here on the award-winning Classical Network. I want to thank our hosts, Bill McLaughlin, Joseph Horowitz, and Angel Gil Ordonez. I want to thank our recording engineer in New York, Bill Zygmunt of Digital Island Studios. Check them out at digital-island-studios.com. Nearly all the music you heard tonight was from the Naxos recording by Post Classical Ensemble called Dvorak and America. Check it out at naxos.com. The next post-classical comes your way on Friday, September 1st, and the focus will be the Mexican composer Silvestre Revueltas. If you enjoyed this program, let us know and email us your comments at info@wwfm.org. I'm David Ozenberg. Thanks for listening.